at School Show. Fred at School Show.
Fred Film Radio for Fred at School. Yes, we are here for the third episode of our international show. I am Nicola Comolci, and I'm very pleased to talk about a film that some years ago, I think 3 years ago to be precise, I watched at Venice for the International Critics Week. And this film was Eat, Sleep, Die by Gabriela Pichler, and it actually went on to win the Audience Awards. We did indeed shown it to our students all around Europe. They brought their very insightful, interesting, and sometimes polarizing reviews and opinions. But also, we're going to start from a conservative way, as I like to call it, to analyze the film, so with our little clip. And then we're going to move on with a special guest.
Fred at School. Eat, Sleep, Die. Originally, Etat Sauveur 2 is the first feature film directed in 2012 by Gabriela Pichler, a Swedish director born in 1980 to Bosnian and Austrian parents. The film is a low-budget production, shot entirely with non-professional actors and in places in the real life of the director, including her home. The film had a sensational reception from the critics and the Swedish public. On the occasion of the Guldbaggen 2012, the Swedish National Film Awards, the film won four of the most important categories: Best Film, Best Director, Best Leading Actress, and Best Original Screenplay. Due to the merit of its content and the issue dealt with, the film was even shown at a special session of the Swedish Parliament. In contention for Critics Week at the 2012 Venice Film Festival, it won the Audience Award. Sweden chose it as a candidate for the Oscars in the Best Foreign Film category, although it did not reach the top five shortlist. Gabriela Pichler is very familiar with the settings and the life stories described in her film. After a childhood and adolescence spent in a suburb of Stockholm, in 2003 she decided to leave her full-time job in a biscuit factory and enrolled at the film school in Gothenburg. There, she made various short films. The most important was the one with which she graduated in 2008, Skrapsa, Scratches, the story of teenagers who venture into a derelict industrial area, perhaps to live or just to pass the time, always in search of love, but at the same time without wanting to show their emotions too much, out of fear of being vulnerable. In 2009, the film won the Guldbaggen for the short film category, and in 2010, the Watch Audience Award at the Uppsala International Short Film Festival, and was sent to various international festivals. Presenting her film, Pichler explained what her creative intentions were. "To make a film about a part of society I have always loved, but to which sometimes I am ashamed to belong. Sweden does not have an easy relationship with its image when dealing with the issue of immigration and political asylum. I want to be part of a process of redefining the national Swedish identity. The story of the leading character has very much to do with her identity and the way in which people see her. But it also shows the experience of so many young people in this period of economic crisis in Europe, where unemployment is very high and the internal contradictions of society are growing. Equally important is the fact that I also wanted to tackle a personal issue and show a type of relationship between father and daughter that I never saw on the screen when I was a girl." Due to her style of directing, many critics have compared Pichler to the Dardenne brothers, something that makes the Swedish director very proud, since she considers them to be her inspiration. Among the other directors who have captivated and influenced her the most are Claire Denis, Wong Kar-wai, and Milos Forman.
And we're back. As usual, our clips are wonderfully informative in any terms. Now we know everything about Gabriela Pichler and all her artistic and life experiences. But then it's time now to introduce our special guest. And I'm talking about Sara Latten, program advisor for Nordic Film at BFI's London Film Festival. Welcome, Sara.
Hello.
So thank you so much for being with us. And so 3 years or something ago, you probably watched Eat, Sleep, Die by Gabriela Pichler, and you decided to bring it to the London Film Festival. So tell me a bit of the sort of background of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually saw some clips from the film back in January 2012 at an event called the Nordic Film Market, which is an industry event run as part of the Gothenburg Film Festival. Right. And one of the great things they do is get programmers from around the world together to look at works in progress of films which are likely to be completed in the upcoming year. So I saw some of the clips of Eat, Sleep, Die. If I remember correctly, the producer was there, China Ahlander, and she talked a little bit about what Gabriela was trying to do and what she was hoping to do with the film. And absolutely, from those first clips that I saw, I immediately thought, wow, this is something different. It's really fresh. And she's got a very unsentimental attitude. It's a very interesting way of making films because she's basing it in reality. It seemed very much based on original research, but it wasn't worthy and it wasn't stilted. But on the other hand, it wasn't really overly sentimental or overly dramatic. I really liked the way that she was beginning to tell stories. And just from, I think it was probably somewhere in the region of about 5 to 10 minutes of clips, I immediately thought, okay, this is something different. This is something that I haven't really seen before. I'm interested in the story. The main actress who is in it, there were some really good clips of her, and I thought, okay, this is probably something which is going to be a strong contender for the festival. So from that point onwards, you kind of put a marker down, and I got in contact with the production company and also with the Swedish Film Institute and said, yeah, this is something that I'm very interested in. As soon as it's completed, let me have a look at it. And I think that probably I got to see the finished film, I think it was in May or June of that year. And again, as soon as I watched it, I knew it was right for us. It was, you know, it was, I found it very moving, but it wasn't sentimental. And what I really liked was it was a story which focused on immigrant and first generation experiences in Sweden, but it kind of did it with a very fresh outlook. And focusing on a woman, that was interesting. She's a kind of tomboy. She is a Muslim, and that's part of who she is. It's not something that's either commented on or foregrounded. And she's kind of already a whole person when we meet her. And the thing that I really liked her was she was shit hot at her job. She was really friendly. She was really outgoing character. She got on with everybody from young boys all the way through all of the older guys who worked with her and that she knew. And she could hold her own. There was a lot of sexual banter and banter that she had with the other characters, and yet there was something about her which was really strong and really unique. And I just thought, wow, she's the kind of woman that I'd like to be friends with. And I was just captivated by her, and you know, just she really was quite inspirational. And you know, although there are things in the story which are, I guess, could be considered as difficult, there's something about her and her spirit which really drew me to the film. So for me, it was absolutely what we say a no-brainer. As soon as I watched it, I was like, okay, we have to have this in the festival. It was a first feature from Gabriela Pichler. So again, I said, this is something that we need to put in our first feature competition as well. And you know, it was absolutely one of those films. As soon as I'd seen it, I was very clear, I want it in the festival, and it's something that we need to support. So, yeah, no, I mean, it was one of the good stories in terms of programming.
It is indeed, because it's kind of like, you know, from what you said, it was, I mean, it's sort of a gamble almost, because 5-10 minutes clip, of course, they can be super strong, but at the same time, you know, a film can kind of crash in 5-10 minutes. So, I mean, I'm glad that you actually, you know, you picked up the sort of courage to show it at the London Film Festival. Myself, I watched it in that year in Venice.
Yes.
And it was, you know, it was one of the best received films.
Didn't it in Venice?
Indeed, that year. Yes, exactly.
Always think, because we're an audience, the London Film Festival is an audience focused festival, mm-hmm. predominantly. You know, that's a really great sign, I think, and it would have been lovely to see it with other people.
And the interesting thing as well that we're talking about audience is that it is a very adult kind of a film, and because you know, we've been showing with a project, Fred at School, we've been showing it to children all over Europe in 8 different countries, with the age spanning between pretty much 14 and 15 years old.
Yeah.
And especially the character of Rasha, so played by Nermina Lukash, it was really a sort of polarizing character, especially regarding which kind of countries and school, of course, they were watching and kind of, you know, getting an intake of the character. So, for example, from South and Eastern Europe, it was very well received. And in France and Spain, they were really put off by her, and also by the, especially in France, by the relationship she had with her father. And in Iceland, for example, they were kind of, you know, it seemed just normal. So it was really interesting, like that, especially Russia, because it's such a fresh, new character that you don't really have, not in any kind of, pretty much any president film doesn't have that sort of tomboy. You know, the tomboy doesn't really fit in her. It's something else.
I mean, it's interesting, because I mentioned before about the sexual banter, mm-hmm. and I had a sort of anticipation and anxiety, you know, is something going to happen to her, because she's a woman and she's around so many men.
Yeah.
And in a way, it was quite pleasing that there wasn't any sexual content. She wasn't raped, or, you know, mm-hmm. there wasn't any sexual violence towards her, because I did feel anxious about that.
Yeah, true. Very true. There's always a sort of we can probably fit it in as a slice of life sort of film, but at the same time, there's so much tension that it could go anywhere. And probably that's also why he kind of put off some of the students. But at the same time, it was really interesting, because he spawned an incredibly intriguing character psychology behind it. You know, everyone was trying to give their own opinion of why she was behaving like that, or what were the upbringing, or why, you know, it was really, really interesting. Something that probably out of all the three films that we watched so far, it was probably very unique. But I want to ask you finally, something regarding the film, because, you know, we're talking about a film that it was out and it did its festival circuit 3 years ago. Now we shown it again to the students. What do you think is still relevant, both in the context and of the story, but also of the fact of showing this film to children of this age, so between 14 and 15, which is a very delicate age?
Yes, it is. I think, firstly, from a female point of view, it's a very relevant film because of the strength of her character. And I think a lot of films that we get to see, women are passive or things happen to them. And the great thing about Rasha's character is that she, although she's in an environment where things happen to her, for example, she loses her job, she still has a very strong sense of herself. And she is somebody who in many ways is determining her own destiny. And I think certainly from a female point of view, or a feminist point of view, that's absolutely the character that I want to be seeing up on the screen, because she's inspirational. And, you know, she's a very empathetic character, so I think she's very easy to identify with. I was slightly intrigued to hear that some people had had an issue with her relationship with her father. Mm-hmm. I actually think, again, you know, for young people, that's something that's very, very interesting, because films tend to be either about young people, middle-aged people, or to a lesser extent, older people. Again, one of the great and relevant things about the film is it's about a younger person's relationship with adults as well. And the relationship with her father, I found really quite poignant. And it's just one of those things. It's an interesting dynamic because it's not a one-way relationship. They support one another. And I think, you know, that's something that doesn't change with time. And the fact that this film was made in 2012, that, you know, it's a kind of timeless idea. And I think as well, you know, the other thing that's interesting about it is it's about immigrant experience. And that's something that's still incredibly relevant throughout Europe at the moment. And, you know, you kind of, in this film, you get an idea of a microcosm. Most of Rasha's friends are not Swedish. They're not speaking Swedish. And yet, you know, they seem to have an element to their experience, which is rooted in being in this small rural Swedish community. And that's interesting to see how people build their lives and build their communities. And, you know, particularly in the UK, we have there's predominant negative attitudes towards immigrants and second generation immigrants, that they just come to a country and strip resources and, you know, make use of health and benefits and things like that. Well, that's not what this film is about. You know, these people are living in difficult circumstances, and really what they want to do is they want to work, they want to have a life for themselves, they want to build a community. And I think, again, you know, that's something that is quite timeless and perhaps even more prescient at the moment because of the rise of anti-immigration ideologies within the political systems in Europe at the moment.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for the inspiring conversation, Sarah.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I only wish that I could be seeing this film for the first time again, because it really is a very special film.
Indeed, exactly. And, well, we're going to just stop by for a short break, but stay with us, always here on Fred at School.
Fred at School Show.
Fred Film Radio, Fred at School. We're here for the third show for Eat, Sleep, Die by Gabriela Pichler. We already listened to the professionals' review as well as the students' review. And now we're starting to get into the thick of it with two of our beautiful coordinators, Italy's Simone Moraldi and France's Benedict Prot. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Perfect, guys. So, I really love the discussions that started to thrive from Eat, Sleep, Die. And I must say the Italian students have been incredibly prolific. Frances were also like kind of very, let's call it, very determined into their analysis. Yeah. But I'd like to dwell upon something that I really found incredibly intriguing from the overall analysis, which is the way that students looked at the character of Rasha. And also the relationship she has with her father specifically. So the concept of family and the twist of it. But before starting, let's listen to the clip and then we get into that.
She is very respectful to her older colleagues. With her peers instead, she is colder and more aggressive. And feeling Swedish, she despises immigrants. The only person she frequently hangs out with is her friend Nikki. He's her age, and even if he seems to be very kind, Rasha treats him really poorly because of her behavior.
Rasha is a tomboy because she grew up with her father and his male friends. She is also confident, smart, and she is able to drive. Her best friend is Nikki, and he is really calm and shy.
There you go. These were probably the extremes of the way to see Rasha.
Great.
But there were also much more than that. Especially from we listened to the beginning was actually from the Munari school in Italy, and the end was at the Grecian Rudesh. Also in France, they said something very. I'm going to start from that actually. One of the students said that the relationship between the father and the daughter is something almost shocking. They described the scene with Rasha washing her father as disturbing and shocking. So let's start from that, Benedict, and then we also follow up with Simone.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was really interesting also because I hadn't myself really noticed that, but And then I started thinking about it. And I think that this is part of the cultural discovery that Freda School provides, because I do think that there is a bit of a difference between the perception of promiscuity and ease with the body between certain European countries. So it's probable that for some Croatian people, you know, more Yugoslav, because that's where Russia comes from, there is a bit more ease in relation to the body and to intimacy. While, for instance, I think in France, we may be a little bit more modest. You know, like girls don't necessarily go together in the loo. I mean, I'm sorry for being quite so specific, but that's actually the scene that was striking to my kids. So this was interesting because it was extra cinematic, but it's part of the cultural discovery.
And Simone, actually, Italy was very, you know, Italian schools were very varied regarding the relationship between father and daughter. What really struck you overall?
Yeah, I agree, first of all, with Benedicta, because I think this is one of the key aspects of the cultural aspect of of Fred at School, because it's a project which gets around different perceptions of social structures, for example, family and relationship between man and woman, because this is also an aspect of what you're talking about. And several clips from students of about It Slipped I were about the relationship between the characters. I say they used to do it very, very often, mm-hmm. and this is one of the key points of the work they do in the class. And there are several schools in Italy, and many of them pointed out this aspect of the relationship between Russia and the father. And I think this is a very key aspect of the film, and I am very happy they were able to raise it.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Also because within, of course, you know, the nature of Fred's School, the nature of the project is about putting into context and also seeing a discussion between nationalities and cultures, national cultures. But here, with this specific film, we just see also like something that goes beyond the concept of nation and culture thereof. In fact, we have differences between the nation itself. So it's just, it's almost as if family treated here, it's a micro universe. And that also spawned so many different reactions. In fact, we have Russia as seen for many schools as a very strong and positive character, whereas for others, it's incredibly negative and too overpowering in a way. So do you think it's just down to culture per se, or probably that's also a sort of a highlight of the fact that family still represents the very first step into the concept of nation and culture per se?
I don't know about that, but as you were speaking, I was thinking about something. This movie was perceived by my students, and I think most of the students, I also spoke to Gonzalo Suarez on his program and on my French program, about this film being hyper-realistic. This is something that bothered the students, but somehow allowed them to go much further in their analysis because and use very cinematic terms. My students were completely new to cinema when we started, mm-hmm. and now they have a very intelligent way to transcend their own opinion, their own immediate opinion on the movie. And I think that one reason why lots of different ideas stemmed from this particular movie is that its realism is so that there's no emphasis on no particular theme, and that racism, nations, family, personal relationships between the daughter and the father, all this is just there without, mm-hmm. with no emphasis, specific emphasis on either of those themes. So it's just, it allows for the mind and the students to maybe focus on one thing or the other, which is actually what happened. You know, some schools said it was about unemployment. Some schools said it was about racism. So,
mm-hmm. And Simone, for you as well?
Yeah, for me, it was the third film in the series. This is very interesting to think about because the sequence of the films in the project was quite interesting because they came from very different experiences than Eat, Sleep, Die, because it's a very rough film from the point of view of from a point of view of language, and also from the point of view of building the characters. The previous films, even if they treated many rough issues, but the form of film was not that rough. So more similar to Academia Platonos, but in Eat, Sleep, Die it was particularly strong. So in some ways, so many students felt quite far from the film, and they felt that the film was very strong and was were touched by the film, but they didn't really they really tried to get into it. So if you listen to the clip, you saw that so many schools say, well, we don't like this film, but it's interesting for this reason, for that reason, for that reason. So it's a very interesting point from the pedagogical point of view, because it's the demonstration of the fact that the project was trying to get into the very inner prejudices of the students as audience, as spectator of cinema. So I guess concerning to your question, it was quite strong, this film in particular, because this rough language was connected to an inner universe of the family. So this contrast maybe created some problems. I don't know how to say it. And the protagonist has the more or less the same age they have. So the identification was a quite a complicated matter for this film, I guess.
Very true, very true.
So, sorry, to follow up? I totally agree with Simone on the fact that their mitigated view on the film itself really pushed them in a way that I did not expect, and it was quite fabulous, actually.
No, indeed, exactly. It's almost the same sort of, the urban legend of the critic as well. A critic always writes much better when he does it like the film. And here, for example, whether the appreciation could be not really the best for the film per se, but that spawned a beautiful discussion. And I witnessed some students' analyses that were incredibly deep. One, for example, Porporato's Lyceum actually mentioned the different colors that represent Russia's emotions. And another one actually noticed, I think from Magrini Maretti, if I'm not mistaken, Simone, they noticed actually that the camera was always handheld around, but then when there was the father and daughter relationship, the scene were shot steadily. So there was a sort of this balance and more solidity. So we really see right now, in the third film of the project, that the students are really going beyond the mere concept of watching, but they try to see much more than that, also through researches as well. Many schools out of all the eight European countries, they started actually reading about the director and see, for example, that she has Bosnian origins. So that's incredibly interesting for me, because from a critical perspective, I think the schools already are doing so much on their own, where probably the project per se just was a trigger for that. And to follow up on this, I just want to ask you if something really, for you two, out of all the clips that you heard, really struck you that you wouldn't expect. So something that the students came up with and you definitely didn't see it coming.
Well, in my case, they were formerly less creative because of the conditions. There were holidays and stuff, so it was a bit more rushed, but actually this favored the spontaneity. And so one class actually held a debate that lasted for 15 minutes and was so interesting. And because they confronted themselves, it became very spontaneous and the content was great. But in a way, also the form, because I could tell that they were feeling very comfortable in front of the mic. So it's not what you'd expect. That is, that it's not that the form itself, that the radiophonic creation itself has improved. Is that they feel more comfortable with the mic, and that's really nice.
And for you, Simone?
Yeah, for me, I had the same problems that Benedict talks about, because also in Italy there were some holidays in that period, so the work of the schools was quite compressed, also because they had a little less time than the other films for reasons due to project organization. So I was quite happy with the results they had, also because as Benedict said, had the fact also you said before, the fact that they didn't really like the film as a matter of taste pushed them to go forward. And what you noticed was quite striking for me, because they were able to notice to make some consideration that really concerned the relationship between the language and the emotions of the film. For example, what you mentioned about Magrini Marchetti School, about the use of the handheld camera and the fixed camera. So I was quite struck by it. And one other thing that struck me was the fact that they were able to make to, they started to contextualize the film in the overall panorama of filmic style and film history. Several schools, like for example the Toschi in Parma, were made references to neorealismo, made references to dogma, made references to the Dardenne brothers. And it is a quite interesting result, because sometimes there are schools that have already their own work on film, and for example the fine arts high schools that are spread in Italy, and Toschi is one of them. This is a type of school in which film is studied as a core subject, so they are already accustomed to it. But it was very strong to see how they and also other schools that don't have film in their curriculum were able to contextualize this film into the project. And one other thing, if I can take some seconds more to talk about it, it was interesting to see the struggle between the taste they wanted to apply to the film and the result of a spectatorship attitude that was out of this taste. So the struggle between the question, do I like this film, or what this film is trying to tell me, it's the different approach that stays in the sentence, I don't like this choice of the director, because in my opinion he should have done this and not what he did. And the other approach, that is, if the director did like this, maybe there is a reason, and I'm here to understand what this reason is. So they try to have a problem with this matter of spectatorship, and it's a very good result.
Very true. In fact, that kind of approach takes years to develop, and here already after three films, we're really witnessing it to that. So yes, Benedict, please.
Yeah, actually, I think that in the span of not even 3 months, in response to what Simone was just saying, it's quite incredible the attitude. They also have the right attitude. My students started from zero, and now they use cinematic terms about a film they didn't like so much. They look cinematic terms, talk about the light, talk about the image, the function of the characters, the intention of the author. They discuss derealism with the proper terms. With the right attitude, they decide to go further and transcend their dislike. And they talked about Europe as well, the debate. So I don't know if it's how we managed to do that, if it's us, if it's the program, or this meeting of energies, but this magic happened from it.
Very true. In fact, whether they're aware or not, this is probably the very core of why we are doing this project. And this is, education in the making and completely independent. And they didn't feel involved, but they really critically analyzed the film to probably the best extent. And with this, I thank you again, guys, for being with us. Thank you very much, Simone and Benedict. And I'll definitely talk to you for the next and last episode of Fred at School for this year, of course, because next year is going to come back again, stronger and bigger. But yes, now we're going to stop for a second, and we're going to be back with the other three coordinators.
Fred at School Show.
Fred Film Radio, Fred at School, here we are back, and we just finished a little chat with some of the coordinators regarding the family and what it means to be a family, and much more as well. But now let's get into another session, so next clip and next conversation. And now I'm pleasingly joined by Nela Gudeli and Kodruta Barb and Odni Sen, respectively coordinators of Croatia, Romania and Iceland. Welcome.
Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Perfect. Okay, so we're all here. We can hear our voices. And so I will just start directly from the clip and listening to the students' little take on the film.
The whole movie is about immigrants who live in Sweden and the way they live.
They're treated differently than people who are
Swedes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
and it showed the realism and the life of people who don't have so much money. It's hard to tell. The reaction of the film takes place in Sweden, and it looks like somewhere in the south of Europe.
Any story that has to do with immigrant and poverty can be well understood by a Spanish audience too.
Going to a richer country is not always the solution to our problems. It's better to remain in your country because you will be a foreigner everywhere else.
The politicians who decide about the fate of immigrants should watch these type of films, because then they might then look at these people in a different way.
So there we are. This was the little clip. And Nela, probably you noticed that there's a big prevalence of actually the Croatian students, because I was actually amazed by the depth of their analysis. At the same time, we heard a bit of the Icelandic takes as well as Spanish. So I just want to start from your experience after this film, Eat, Sleep, Die, and your students, Nela. So you were also pleased and intrigued by their analysis. Tell me a bit more about it.
Yeah, because the topics that is a thread all over the four films, it is the life of the immigrants, which is not that easy. And our students, in a way, were shocked by the reality of the lives around them, because they didn't pay attention before. And recently we have been witnessing as well a lot of tragedy coming from Lampedusa through the Italian borders, and the people who are flooding into Croatia as well. And the films were the first ones to bring them into reality. So they even thought that this was a real, this is the characteristics of the European film, of course, which they learned afterwards, what is the difference in between the Hollywood and action films and the European made films. So that was the first thing they learned, and then they did a very deep analysis, and they thought very seriously, deeply over the topics, which was intriguing analysis for me to hear them, that they are really very much aware of what is going around.
Exactly, yes. And also Oddný, one of the things that kind of joins and unites both the Icelandic students as well as the Croatians, is the fact of the shock that they received when they saw immigrants discriminating immigrants. So I just wanted to hear more about your take and what really impressed you from your students.
Yeah, what impressed me most was a comment from a young girl in Österberg School in Reykjavik. Extremely pleased to see strong female character in a lead role who stood up for herself and is not really a stereotypical sort of person, but unique, and got sort of insight into her life and what it was to be an immigrant and a girl who has not studied. So she is really at a disadvantage.
Indeed, exactly. And Kondruta as well. What was your take as well? What the students brought about in the conversation and in the discussion, especially regarding this, the fact of this sort of inner discrimination, so between the immigrants that made it and the immigrants that are still trying to make it. And also another thing that I want to ask you all is it's the symbol as well of Raja's surname, which, you know, encompasses both the past, so her, you know, Montenegrin origins, but as well as the sort of the burden that represents to become fully Swedish.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so first of all, about immigrants discriminating immigrants, what the students in Romania observed is the thing that, okay, we know us from Romania, many people have went to other countries that are considered like, you know, they have better working places and life conditions. Mm-hmm. So they made a comparison between what we see in here of the immigrants, like on the news, or what we hear from families that are talking about, and what is actually going on in there. And the students got to the conclusion that this is real. This happens also between Romanians who go, and they I don't know, have to fight for better jobs with other immigrants. So they thought this is the main reason why there has to be this conflict between them, because everyone fights for a better life in the end. So sometimes, this is the not so happy part of being an immigrant and trying to make a life in another country beside your own. So mostly this is what they thought. It's not good. They didn't like it. We try to find reasons and solutions for improving and putting a stop to this. But as we have seen on the news, it's still an ongoing problem. And sometimes it deals more with politics involved than with the actual people, because kind of complicated.
It is, of course it is, but the strength of this film is the fact of making it in a very simple way, bringing about so many important issues in European level. And in fact, once again, I'm going to bring back to you that little symbol that I mentioned earlier. So the surname. I wonder if in between the discussions that you had with your Croatian, Icelandic and Romanian students, that little thing came about, or maybe was actually discarded or just ignored. So the fact that Russia's surname still is a burden for her. She will never be able, or it seems like that she thinks that she will never be able to be fully Swedish as well as being fully the origins of her father.
Croatian students sort of discuss that, because they all do know the meaning of Russia, and they learn these things in the history lectures and the history subject. And the problem is that we have been having also the Croatian people trying to find a better life elsewhere. So the problem is that they can't ever become equal members of any society, because also not of the surnames and the burden. It's not a burden. It's something that their families are being proud of, that they carry in their surnames and the family names, traditions, and the belongings to the where they came from. And the kids do have this wish to be completely immersed and accepted by the communities, the new communities they actually live in. So they are torn apart, because within their families they are asked to still belong to the countries where they don't anymore live. So it is very difficult to become an equal member of somewhere else, and at the same time they don't even any longer belong to where they came from. So it is really a gap that they have to inhabit. This is really difficult. So there is no institution and there are no measures that can help them overcome that gap. So they have to find their own way how to live with it or in it.
Very, very true. And almost in a kind of like extreme, the other extreme of the spectrum is probably the Icelandic students, because I never really heard that mentioned in the discussions that I listened to. But Oddný, please tell me if you actually did or something like that, came about into the discussions and with the students.
It never came into the actual discussions, the symbol, of Russia. But they were still amazed, and they are amazed and shocked at the way immigrants, the challenge the immigrants have to go through. And as I've said before, we very recently had immigrants coming to Iceland. It's only about 10 years or so.
True.
So this is sort of like a new perspective here, and we don't have from many countries. We have from very specific countries, and I think most Icelanders are very pleased and happy with what they bring, and I think it's enriching to the society as a whole. And I believe that most of the students are of this opinion, so they sort of think more. This is this is how immigrants live in Europe or elsewhere, and they are quite amazed of this.
a question for all you three, and it's something very simple, but at the same time very interesting. I wonder if any of you heard some insight and some sort of analysis by the students that you would not have expected from the actual film's analysis. So something that you thought that it was incredibly interesting, and as well as a new, you know, just a new core of a new analysis that had come about. So for example, just to tell you, I loved a take from an Icelandic student that said her clothes really reflect her character. So I love that, for example. But I want to hear, for example, from Kodruta, if she heard something that really struck her, as well as, of course, Nela and Otni.
Well, what my students were struck, as we spoke before, it wasn't really about the name. We don't get to know about the name Rasen here that much. So they talked about the perspective in general. But what was amazing, it was like I had a mini discussion with some of the students before actually seeing the movie. And I was just curious about where, if they want to go like study in other countries or work and travel or programs like this or volunteer, where would they want to go? And most of them, like about 90%, said they want to go to the Nordic countries because they've heard there is better, the life is okay, it's healthy, they get many other benefits, you know, while living there. So after seeing the movie, they were okay, we are thinking again and doing some more research, and they were okay, so these things can happen there too. We should know more about it. So this is a fact that amazed me afterwards.
Of course. And you, Nela?
Yeah, we were really astonished in a positive way, because in all our national films we did have some film critics and the people who really are the film connoisseurs, so they were listening to the clips and to the comments of our students, and they were, because they are very young age, so they are the eighth graders of the primary schools in Croatia, so you do not quite expect that they look at the filming process with such an observant eye. So they just show and recognize very many different techniques in the filming process, and they then recognize that that is the way, one of the ways why it looked so real for them. So that the way the it was directed, the way it was like shot, the everything that was done and the way it was filmed was just made on the on purpose to make it seem and look so really lifelike. So that is something that I didn't expect from our students to be so much observant on those details, because they don't usually get so much of the, let's say, media or film training in their schools, in their curricula.
Of course. And Odni, to conclude?
Yes, I agree with both. They found the film extremely realistically shot, and they mentioned that. And also they talked about that they really want to go and study abroad, but I don't think in the Nordic countries, because Iceland is one of the Nordic countries. They have been asking me, because I've traveled a lot, and I did travel at a very young age through Bosnia. Mm-hmm. And down to Greece, and I've been telling them sort of a little bit about my travels, and they've been very interested. But I think they would like to go and study in France, Italy, or the UK, something like that.
There you go. It's a reverse. It's a reverse. Southern Europe wants to go north, and the Northern Europe wants to go south. But thank you so much. Thank you so much for your intake. And just to conclude and kind of like to wrap up this beautiful analysis, I love the fact that, you know, this film kind of divided students. He had very disparate appreciations, let's say like that. But I love the fact of one of the students from Rude.
Fred at School Show.
Fred at School, we're back again. We listened to the very insightful opinions of our coordinators, and but now, you know, let's never forget that everything here gravitates around students. And in fact, one of the most interesting things that especially for this film, for Islip Dao, came about the school discussions was the director's message. Here, very, very frequently, we heard the students trying to personify themselves with the director and try to adopt her perspective on the film. So let's listen this brief clip about it.
Gabriela Pichler can have compliments for her works and as a director and gets my respect.
We have the impression that the director simply recorded a period in the life of some ordinary people, and everyday life is often boring.
Unlike Russia, the director of the film worked in a cookies factory. It is probably due to this experience that Pichler so truthfully evoked the life of Swedish immigrants.
And it's difficult to get a job and without the studies. It's more difficult to get a job to other person who has studied more, and it's more simple life.
The movie was, it had a message, an optimistic message, and I think what's the most important thing, that it gives hope.
And this was a student's perspective on the director's message, and I'm sure you found it insightful. But today we have an exceptional guest. In fact, we have Kina Elander, producer of Eat, Sleep, Die. Welcome, Kina.
Thank you very much.
So, finally, we have a producer witness here, so we can actually understand the main production and what it means to be a producer. But let's all start from the very beginning. So, when did it all start? How did you hear of Gabriela's script?
Well, that's a peculiar question, because I didn't really hear of the script. They called me because they needed some help, and they are from the region, but they Gabriela and the crew working with her at that time, they were from another they live in another part of Sweden, in Gothenburg, so they came mm-hmm. to Skåne, where Gabriela is originating from, and they needed some help putting together the crew and some mm-hmm. production managing, let's say. And that's why they contacted me and presented the project to me. And I got really, really interested and overwhelmed when I saw also the idea of the film, that I think giving voice to a group of people usually you don't see on screen. And it made it very important for me to be part of this project and do my very best to make it real.
And in fact, that's precisely what I wanted to ask you. The fact that there's a relevance, and also there's almost a duty in the message of this film, you know, to represent these people that usually don't have their voices represented.
Mm-hmm.
And what were your main concerns from a producer's perspective to make the film actually work? You were more sort of executive producer, or you were a hands-on producer? What was your, you know, your main kind of drive?
Well, my main task was to protect the vision of mm-hmm. the film, of the idea that Gabriela had from the very beginning, I wanted to make it super professional film in a way that I wanted to give it the best opportunities, both yeah. economically, but also with the best crew behind camera. In front of camera, we had only first-time actors,
mm-hmm.
Behind the camera, I thought it was really important to have a very skilled and flexible crew that could follow the idea of the film. And in
of course,
we were shooting on location with these first time actors, I was not an executive producer sitting behind my desk. In fact, I was the first AD as well.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was really hands on, let's say, during the shooting of the film. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the students were so struck by the realism of the film that some of them also said this is more a documentary, or this is, you know, just seems like a home video made by a non-professional crew. But in fact, you know, you just said that there was so much professionalism behind the camera.
Yeah.
So can you just tell us, for example,
I don't know if you heard the quote of Dolly Parton.
Tell me.
She says, "It takes a fortune to lose look this cheap. And it's about the same with this film, you know. It was really well planned, and every scene is more or less as in the script. And also the lines, even if in some situation we were more flexible and they could improvise regarding the lines, but still it was very clear what was the aim with the shooting of a particular scene.
Of course.
And I can tell you about the DOP, who is also the Gabriella's partner, Johan Lundborg. He worked, he has done his own documentaries, and he's really quick with the camera. And he was working without a focus puller. He did his own focus pulling and could be very flexible and follow the characters. So you get this, you could say, documentary feeling.
Mm-hmm. And just to conclude as well, regarding the project that we're doing now, so Fred at School, that we, you know, we kind of brought a new different kind of life to It Sleep Die. In fact, eight European countries and all the schools inside it, they've been watching the film, they've been discussing the film, they've been analyzing the themes, but also the camera work. So, it, you know, It Sleep Die became a critical object for, you know, students from secondary school all over Europe. And let's say from, you know, after 3 years or so that, you know, the film was produced and also he had its festival run, what do you still cherish from that experience, you know, 3 years on now in 2015?
I'm very proud of the production, and I still think it's outstanding in the way it gives voice to this particular group of people who is, I mean, it's the common Swede. It's the Swede living not in the three main cities in Sweden, but it gives a very good picture of Sweden if you go into the countryside.
Of course. And thank you very much. Thank you very much, Kina, for telling us all the, you know, behind the scenes of the film. And thank you, of course, you know, send my regards to Gabriela when you're going to see her, because I know that she's very busy with production, theater production. But for the time being, I hope you enjoy the little chat and hopefully see you soon with the next film here on Fred at School.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, this was a very, very interesting conversation with Kina Elander, producer of Eat, Sleep, Die. But now just stay put for a second, and we're going to be back after a very short break.
Fred at School Show.
Fred at School, we're back for the final little chapter of our international program. And for once, finally, you don't need to listen to me blabbering away, but I have a very special guest with me. And this guest is Sonali Rai, audio description representative for the Royal National Institute for Blind People. Welcome.
Thank you, Nico. Thanks very much. Hi, everyone.
I want to just go straight into the conversation, because Fred at School as a project is really, really caring about the universal accessibility of cinema. And in fact, your work for us is gold. And I just want to introduce your work and for us, and also to kind of like put a highlight into such an important and essential effort for making cinema and the experience of cinema available for everybody.
Oh, thanks very much. That sounds really good. So RNIB over the years has done a lot of good work, and I think it's been a pleasure for me. It's been an honor for me to be involved with some of them. So we advocate for audio description across platforms. So that's across broadcast television, across DVDs, home entertainment, Blu-rays, and of course cinemas and theaters. I'm sure all your listeners already know the UK leads the world in terms of availability of audio described content, again, irrespective of the platform. Now, if we're talking about cinemas, in fact, I would say most of the cinema exhibitor chains in the UK, today have the right equipment and are set up to deliver audio description. So you would find that 8 out of the 10 leading titles on a weekly basis deliver description. And quite often the description is then carried on to DVD and Blu-ray player on Blu-ray discs. As far as the broadcast scene is concerned, about 70 channels last year deliver description on more than 20% of the content. Of course, our legislation mandates AD on only 10% of the content, but the broadcasters are a committed lot in the UK, so they deliver AD on quite a lot more content.
Indeed, yes. And this issue also is very, very dear for Fredette School's project. In fact, since the very beginning, every single film is accessible through via audio description thanks to the app and the Sub-T partnership. Because something that it has to be clear is that the experience of cinema, it just doesn't, you know, it's not bound on the visual part of it, but it's just also the overall atmosphere and being involved socially as well, in a way, into this experience, artistic experience, that it's much more than just visuals, but in fact audio can really bring everyone together. But speaking again about your efforts all throughout the years, where do you think we are right now, and also how do you think the foreseeable future, where we head into right now?
I think technology is posing a real challenge right now. In fact, I would say an exciting challenge, because most of the viewing is now moving towards online viewing.
True.
So the challenge for us is video on demand and online delivery of content. So we need to make sure that audio description is available online on online content. So such as players like, in fact, Netflix has taken the first step. They're delivering audio description now, which is fantastic. But there's so many other players right now. You talk about iTunes, Amazon Instant, Google Play. And if we're talking about the UK, of course, we're talking about the broadcast catch-up players, like the BBC iPlayer, which delivers audio description. But you've got the ITV player, we've got 4OT, we've got Sky Go. So the challenge is to get content online with audio description for us. And it's not just the availability of audio description, but also the players themselves, they have to be accessible. They need to work with voiceover and talkback.
Indeed, indeed. And exactly, you know, we here at Fredette School, we started from the very scratch. You know, this project is just 1 year old, almost, and we are about to finish, to wrap up the first year. But since the very beginning, we always wanted to welcome everybody without, you know, like taking anybody actually outside of the project. And that's why we always provided audio descriptions and also visual and audio aids for all the students involved in this project. And Sonali, well, I really thank you for being here, and also to give us a bit of insight about the state of accessibility nowadays. And hopefully I'll talk to you next year for the second year of Fredette School.
Oh, thank you very much. And your project sounds fabulous. Good luck with it.
Thank you, Selina. That's very kind of you. Well, so that was a very insightful conversation. Finally, we shed some light on accessibility and all the beautiful efforts that institutions such as the Royal National Institute for the Blind do, and which Solina, of course, is the executive of it. And you know, in our little and humble beginning for Fredette School, we made this very effort from the very beginning. So every single film, thanks to also the app that goes along with the project, we make every single content accessible thanks to the Sub-T app. And because for cinema, as I said, also in the conversation with Selina, has to be something universal. The experience has to be universal. And cinema, of course, is evolving. As we said, the VOD and internet platform are shaping the way that we consume cinema and film viewing. But at the same time, the core is always there, which is a social and a personal journey through images and sounds. Well, we kind of came up now to the very end of the show. That was a really, really thick of information and hopefully very interesting conversations. And as usual, I have to thank all our partners, and I want to thank all our partners because they make this project possible, starting from, of course, Fred Film Radio, which, you know, I am part of it, of course, and then our official partners, which are UAB, University of Barcelona, University of Roehampton, and Babes Bolyai, respectively in Spain, Great Britain, and Romania, and then, of course, IACE Torino in Italy, Les Amis du Cinéma de Réel in France, Tofra Lampin in Iceland. As you can see, my Icelandic is improving day by day, episode by episode. And Festival de Cannes, of course, but spelled C-A-N-S from Spain. HRT from Croatia. Sub-T Limited from Great Britain. And My Movies in Venice Day from Italy, of course. Claudia Tomassini, an associate from Germany. And Sub-T Access, in fact, accessibility here for Italy. well, let alone, of course, never forgetting our two main sponsors, which is the Regione Autonoma della Sardegna and Sardinia Film Commission. So here we are. This is the official wrap-up for the third international episode of Fred at School, and I shall see you very soon for the fourth and last chapter of our Fred at School venture. And this is Nicola Comotti here, always, for Fred at School at Fred Film Radio.